perde.
Mrs. Olson, sixth grade at Terrell Avenue School, prepared the following program.
Boys and girls, this is Mrs. Blair, Peter's mother.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Blair.
Mrs. Blair has kindly offered to record our tiny program. To introduce our program, I should like to state that we have been studying about the Chinese Republic and feel that we have learned something very interesting. Here is our program, which we hope you will enjoy.
Part 1. In the matter, Helen Pinckney, Louise Waltman, Joan Underwood, Paul Hatt, and Robert Cousins. At last we are here. Let's go look for a guide. Can I help you look for something? Let's start off with sandalwood. Sandalwood is shipped to China from India and the East Indies. It is a scarce, valuable wood and is so heavy that it will hardly float in the water. It is well suited to making carved boxes, fans, walking canes, and many other things. This is a sandalwood fan. Sandalwood has a pleasant odor from the oil which it contains. This oil can be pressed out over perfume, cosmetics, and medicines. Ground up sandalwood is added to incense to make it smell better. Large amounts of this incense is used in temples.
Is there any information here on the ceremonial tea set?
Yes, we are very fortunate to have one because it is quite scarce. In China, they use the ceremonial tea set more for the ceremony rather than drinking tea. In this country, we want a piping hot dish of tea, but there they use it only for the ceremony.
Look at this beautiful jade. During the days of the ancient Chinese civilization, jade took place of gold and other precious stones. The Chinese carved it into jewelry and buried it with their dead. Many beautiful jade carvings, dating from 400 BC, have been dug up from the ruins of Anyang, the capital of the first Chinese dynasty. This jade probably comes from the Ming period, 1368 to 1644. The exact when jade reached its height. These carvings are treasured by collectors throughout the world. In this next room, we have a silk tapestry printed with ink. Miss McGuire will tell you about it.
In the 12th century, the Song Emperor, Hai Song, ordered an artist to paint a picture of the Chinese holiday, Qingming. Qingming was a holiday on which the Chinese honored their dead. The artist produced a picture in the form of a scroll, 33 feet long. The scroll has been copied later by many artists. One of the most outstanding copies is here in this museum. This scroll illustrates all activities on the holiday from dawn to dusk and was painted on silk. The scroll begins with a peaceful scene near the Honan Hills. The mist of early morning still sweeps over the rice fields, but the travelers are already on their way to enjoy the holiday in the city. Soon, the Huanghe, or Yellow River, comes into view. It serves as a guide through the picture as it flows in and out of the entire length of the scroll. I hope you enjoy the other scenes on this scroll. They are very pretty.
How did they get the silk to make the scroll?
You know, for many years, that China was the leading silk country of the world. At first, the silkworms are the size of a baby ant, but they grow quickly. On the shallow trays of bamboo, they eat and sleep. Then they shed their tight skins. Another eating, more sleeping, and their growing bodies are once again too big for their cases. When this has happened four times, the tiny hair-like worms become fat-grained creatures. The work of unwinding the delicate threads from these cocoons is now done chiefly by women and girls in factories. The silkworms are killed by boiling or baking, and the cocoons are soaked and steamed soft. Then several tiny strands are gathered together and spun into thread.
The Chinese also use silk for clothing, but only the rich people could do that because the rest are poor. They wear suits of thread and wadded cotton in an effort to keep warm. As the weather grows colder, the Chinese put on more suits. Chinese men wear small, round, black hats topped by buttons which show their rank. Here is a Chinese costume.
One of the Chinese symbols is the dragon, which they embroider on their clothes. They called it the dragon because it was the most terrible monster of the ancient world. Dragons, of course, really did not exist, but most people believed in them. They were huge, fire-breathing creatures with wings like a giant bat. Its snake-like body was covered with scales, and on the tip of its pointed tail was a poisonous sting. From its flaring nostrils came clouds of smoke and flames that brought death to those who breathed it. Dragons were like great reptiles which existed long before man is supposed to have appeared on Earth, and were very evil and destructive. But the Chinese took the dragon as a kingly emblem and thought it as a god. A dragon is the emblem of the Emperor of China and has five claws. Others have only four.
Here is a Chinese fan with a dragon on it. The first folding fans were made in China in the 1500s. They were very pretty indeed. A very interesting fan came from China in the late 1700s. On the fan is shown the Empress of China and the first American vessel to sail from the United States to the Chinese port of Wangfeng.
Let us go down to the basement where the aquariums are. We can see some Chinese goldfish there. We will take an elevator.
That elevator was fast.
Let's look at this tank.
There is a plate on the side. What does it say?
It says that the Chinese started breeding goldfish many thousands of years ago, but the Japanese helped produce the many kinds seen today.
The guided tour is over. Part 2, Chinese Literature and Writing. The pupils taking part are David Youngblood, Phyllis Amelian, Judy Hudson, Susan Levine, Joan Percher, and Gloria Caruso.
Chinese literature goes back through hundreds of years. with no dark ages like those of Europe. The favorite kind of literature is poetry, but all kinds of writings are part of Chinese culture. Western countries know little about it because few translations have been made. Modern Chinese writing often deals with Western ideas, describing scientific, engineering, and political achievements. One of the most outstanding Chinese legends is the Nightingale. Many people had heard it, yet the emperor never did. One day the servants got it for him. It sang so beautifully, and he was enchanted by the music immediately. He got a present from Japan. It was a bird made of gems that sang just as sweetly. The emperor thought it better than the real bird. This is the state he is in now. Oh, beautiful. It broke. Oh, I can't face the world again. After many tries, they say that the bird can only be played once a year. 4 years later is a hole outside his room. Have you seen the emperor? Oh, the emperor. He's dead, almost. Don't worry, we have no one to take his place. In the emperor's room. Oh, dead. Stop heckling me. Wait, what's that? My bird! Oh, look! Death is disappearing. Oh, bird, you will sing to me from now on, and live happily ever after. Talking about legends sent me to thinking about writing. Phyllis, what do you know about writing?
There are three types of Chinese characters: pictograms, ideograms, and phonograms. Pictograms are rough pictures of the words meaning. Ideograms are formed by putting several pictograms together in a way to form a new character. Phonograms are formed by putting a character which shows meaning with a character that shows pronunciation. Chinese normally write with brush and thick ink, but modern Chinese write with pen or pencil. The Chinese system of writing is said to contain 40,000 characters. Julie, you have something else on Chinese writing, don't you?
Yes, I do. Writing in China began long, long ago in the Shang Dynasty. The first real book were probably the five classics which Confucius wrote. The Chinese had no alphabet, just characters. Each character is a picture of what it stands for. By putting two characters together, they will form one character. There are 34 different strokes in the many, many thousands of characters. This is the character for game. Susan, don't you have something on the Chinese game?
Yes, I do. The Chinese people like to play games and tell funny stories. Chinese children play a kind of hopscotch called Tai Chen Si, in which a stone is kicked from one square to another while the kicker stands on one foot. They also play marbles and jump rope. Children and grown-ups play catch cradle, where a string is wound around the fingers to make coils and loops. Kite flying is a favorite sport and riddle telling game. Did you know that sometimes Chinese instruments accompany the game? I know something about the Chinese instruments.
I do too. The first instrument I'm going to tell you about is the Yehu. The Yehu is a two-string The bottom is held between the knees. The player saws back and forth with a bow. The bowstring. The bowstring is threaded through two strings of the fiddle. A Chinese lute is a very slender necked instrument. It has strings of twisted silk. The musician plucks the strings, which brings forth mournful tunes. The pipa is a very ancient instrument. It is very much like our guitar. It has four strings which the player strums. The cheng is a small hand organ which was used in China in about the middle of the 1200s. The cheng was a forerunner of our modern accordion. It has bellows for air on each side. Chinese cymbals are two round pieces of metal. The player clashes them on a sliding movement, which brings forth harsh musical sounds. Now that I have told you about Chinese instruments, Gloria will tell you about Chinese music.
Chinese music is used in theaters as part of plays and is sung by Chinese in their own folk tunes. Some songs are sung in honor of Confucius and are changed in different parts of the year. Chinese tunes are different from Americans because their scale is built on five or seven notes, and American music is on eight-note octaves. Many Chinese tunes are not written on paper, but are remembered and passed through the ages. Chinese musicians sit cross-legged, playing their melodies. Dance or orchestras are not common in China because the Chinese men and women do not often dance together. But the Chinese are fond of American popular songs. American dance music seems to hold a special appeal to the young Chinese people, and they often attend dance parties much like those in America.
Part 3. Sightseeing in China. The pupils taking part are Edward Kunkel, Peter Blair, Albert Cavallaro, Albert Fredrickson, and Stanley Cardock.
Well, here we are in China. Let's go up the Wang Ho and visit the Great Wall.
I see it in distance. The Great Wall of China is the longest fortified defense ever built. It stretches for about 1,500 miles along the border of Mongolia and China proper. The wall is about 22 feet high, 20 feet across at the base, and 15 feet across at the top. Towers 35 to 40 feet high are built into the wall every 200 to 300 yards. Mongolians call the wall the White Wall. The Chinese call it the Wall of 2,000 Li. Li is a measure of distance. It was built in 200 BC during the Qin Dynasty to keep out other tribes. In spite of its age, most of the wall is in fairly good condition.
Another reason why the wall was built was to keep out Kublai Khan and the Mongolians.
Who was Kublai Khan?
Kublai Khan was the ruler of China in the year 1259. He completed the conquest of North China, and his brother, Manggu, added South China to his brother's rule. Kublai Khan ruled most of Europe, Asia, and Russia. Kublai Khan's ruler when Marco Polo visited China. Marco Polo received many gifts. Among them was a golden tablet. Kublai Khan died Mandari at the age of 82, and his empire broke up into several empires.
Oh, look, there's a pagoda in the distance.
What's a pagoda?
A pagoda is a tall, tower-like building with many stories. They are common in Burma, Siam, China, Japan, and India. In India, the pagoda may be an addition to a temple, or it may be a temple itself. The Chinese pagoda is often a memorial building. The typical Chinese pagoda has eight sides and many stories. Each story has an arch roof which curves upward. They use brick, glazed tile, or porcelain to build them. They use ivory, foam, and stonework to decorate them. In some parts of China today, the pagoda is as common as the windmill is in Holland.
Let's have some tea. Let's go down to the tea shop in the tower. Did I ever tell you about the legend of tea? Once there was a saint in India who prayed without stopping for many years. Then, one day, he fell asleep. The saint was so sorry that he had fallen asleep that he cut off his eyelids and threw them away. For 5 years more, he continued his prayers without sleep. Then he again felt sleep coming over him. He chewed some leaves from a shrub nearby and began to feel bright and wide awake. When people learned of the shrub, many others began to chew its leaves. In India, tea was used as a drink as early as the 500s. By the 800s, the Japanese were growing tea plants in all parts of their country. But the Europeans did not learn of tea until the 1700s, when Dutch traders brought back tea leaves from China. Soon the English were drinking tea at the rate of 2 pounds a year per person. About 150 to 200 cups of tea can be brewed from each pound. The tea industry began in British India about 1834. It was made a paying business in Formosa about 1860, and in Ceylon in 1870. Today, India, Ceylon, Indonesia, and China ship about 800 million pounds of tea each year to other countries besides the tea they use themselves.
Let's go and see a bamboo grove. Do you know anything about bamboo?
Well, I looked up some information on bamboo when I went to school in Oceanside. Bamboo sometimes grows to be 120 feet, and its branches are sometimes 5 feet thick. Its seeds take the place of rice when a farmer has had a bad crop. Bamboo can be sawed into sections and used for toys, hand tools, carriages, carts, hats, walls, roofs, ornaments, and houses. Well, let's go back to the hotel now where we have our reservations. Part 4. Three Famous Men. The pupils that take place in this scene are James Reardon, Nell Nelson, Paul Sackey, Dick Klein, and Hugh Tannenbaum. Probably one of China's greatest men was Confucius. He lived about 2,500 years ago. His father had died when he was 3 years old, and his mother was very poor, but he still got the best education available. Later on, he taught the secret of good government. This was choosing honest and educated officials. Confucius tried to make the rulers listen to his teachings of just government, but the rulers ignored him. Confucius taught for 50 years, but died almost unknown.
five classics which he wrote about his teachings became the Confucian Bible and was used in Chinese schools as textbooks. The emperor said that Confucius was teacher of teachers and is still honored in China today. These are some of the wise sayings written by Confucius. Do not do unto others what you would not like done unto yourself. The superior man is slow in speech, but prompt in action. All within the four seas are brothers. A youth at home should honor his parents, and abroad show respect to his elders. Of all unworthy acts, the worst is disobedience. James, do you have any more to add about Confucius?
Yes. Confucius was one of the wise and great thinkers of the Chow Dynasty. He read a great amount of material in history, poetry, and other writings. Out of all he read, he chose what he thought most important and wrote them into five books called the Five Classics. They are very important in China. Much of China's past would have been lost if it were not for Confucius. He taught a religion called Confucianism. He went from lord to lord, but no one would adopt it. Now Confucianism is the religion of millions of Chinese. Confucius had ideas that many people of today have.
Pardon me, I found something else about Confucius in our own history book. Confucius was very serious about man's duty to man. On one occasion, he was asked if he knew a single word that might be taken as a rule of conduct all through life. His answer, consideration. For Sun Yat-sen was a great man. Can you tell us anything about him?
Yes, I can. First thing I would like to say is that he had a title called the George Washington of China. He was born in the Shantung district of the Kwantung province. He went to Hawaii for a few years. Later, he returned to China to study medicine. He studied at the University of Hong Kong, Macao, and Yang Kling. A few years later, he disagreed with a man named Wan Chaikai, who tried to overthrow China. He was unsuccessful and had to flee to Japan. In 1916, Wan died and Sun Yat-sen came back. When he saw that he could gain power, he tried to get help from other countries. After trying many countries, he finally got help from the Soviet Union. But he died December 31st, 1924, almost too late to help China a great deal. His tomb is in Nanking. A great fact is that in World War I, as you know, the Japanese bombed most of China, but the Japanese did not bomb his tomb because they so respected him. So you can see that Sun Yat-sen really did deserve the title, the George Washington of China.
Do you know what happened after Sun Yat-sen's death? Do you know who became the new Chinese leader? It was easy to win the Manchu dynasty, but it was not easy to build a republic. Dr. Sun Yat-sen almost did make China a republic, but then he died. Now, General Chiang Kai-shek is trying to make China a republic. The Chinese own Formosa, pin hopes on an old dream. In the classrooms of Formosa, Chinese school children are painstakingly, eagerly learning to write the characters which spell out the dream and the hope of the island's 9 million free Chinese. Liberate the mainland. Chang 5 USSR, voice port tree. That means, in 1945, a treaty was signed called Nationalist Chinese Russian Treaty, which gave Russia rights to 2 Manchurian ports, Dairen and Port Arthur. Russia did not keep to the treaty, so Chang had defied it. I can bring China up to date by saying Chinese farmers are slowly growing modern, but some farmers still use their forefathers' tools because on their small farms, these machines would be too large. In places where farms have been joined together, machines are being used.
We shall close our program with an old Chinese poem.
Chinese lullaby. Chinese sandman, wise and creepy, croon dream songs to make us sleepy. A Chinese maid with slanting eyes is queen of all their lullabies. On her ancient moon guitar, she strums a sleep song to a star. And when big China shadows fall, snow white lilies hear her call. Chinese sandman, wise and creepy, croon dream songs to make us sleepy.
Now Mrs. Olson will sing a song.
Now the day is over, night is drawing on, shadows of the evening deep.